This is Lindy T. I am the current archivist for District 17. And today we are going to be interviewing Judy L., who I have the pleasure to meet today. It's May 1st, 2023, and we are at the Lost and Found Club in Ocala. I'm going to apologize in advance if there's any background noise. This is a public place, although there's nobody here. There could be some people coming and going. So, Judy, let's hear a little bit about your childhood, where you grew up, and what your childhood was like.
Okay. Well, my name is Judy Lenz, and I am an alcoholic. And I was born in St. Pete, Florida. And when I was 3 years old, we moved to Plant City, and that's where I grew up till I graduated from high school. And any of you who know Plant City, it's a very small town. For a long time, it was the strawberry capital of the world, and they rolled up the sidewalks at 9 o'clock. And anything that happened, everybody knew about it. So
I have been to the Strawberry Festival.
Yes. So I, my mom and dad were married for over 60 years, and they lived in the same house that we moved into Plant City for all of that time, except for maybe the last 10 or 15 years when they moved to Ocala. I have an older brother and a younger sister and a younger brother, none of whom that I know of are alcoholics. So how I faithfully got this disease, I don't know. I grew up with the understanding that an alcoholic was a person who lived on the streets, wore a raincoat, you know, lived under the bridges, and that's all I knew. And my high school senior class was about 350 people. So we knew almost everybody. And as far, and like I said, it's such a small town, there wasn't a lot of hell raising going on because you had to leave town. And so I didn't know at that point in time anybody who drank when I graduated from high school. I always felt like something was missing in my life. My father would occasionally have a beer. My sister came home drunk one night when she was still in high school, and he swore that he would never drink again and didn't. So I wasn't raised around a lot of alcohol. And that's not what I mean missing. There was just something missing, and I was looking for something that I just didn't have spiritually, I guess. So when I graduated, I went to the University of Florida and was introduced to alcohol there.
Okay.
Invited to fraternity parties, and you know, there was drinking going on at the parties, but there wasn't supposed to be. So that made it all more mystical.
And Dad wasn't around to kind of see what you were doing.
I felt all of a sudden, because my parents kept really tight constraints on us as we were growing up. And we had a fenced yard, and you really didn't leave the fenced yard too much. So, leaving home was a big deal, and it was... it wasn't a scary thing to me. I was ready to go. And even though I had an older brother, he was a little bit quieter and a little bit shyer and didn't get into any trouble or anything. And so, you know, I was the one. At the University of Florida, like I said, I was introduced to alcohol. I met my husband, the father of my children there, and we enjoyed going to fraternity parties and activities, and there was always alcohol a part of it. And I I didn't, everybody I knew there drank. So it didn't, you know, I didn't kind of stand out in any way at that point in time. It seemed to lead to a good time, and it was just very enjoyable. Of course, my grades went down because I was more interested in living life than learning about what was being taught in the classes. And eventually, my parents thought it was best if I didn't come home. They weren't ready for me to come home, but if I moved to Winter Haven and went to a community college there at Winter Haven. And so I did. And when I was getting ready to get my AA degree, when I was getting ready to get my AA degree, I was so ready to get back to the University of Florida and my boyfriend and all this kind of stuff that I wound up finishing my classes in Winter Haven, which were on Tuesday and Thursday, and starting classes that were on another, you know, system back in Gainesville on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. That way I got to spend the weekend in Gainesville. So anyway, I did wind up getting my AA degree and married my husband, and we moved to Sarasota.
Okay.
And when we moved to Sarasota, nothing really slowed down too much. I was a stay-at-home mom for a while because I, by the time we, in 1969, we had our first child, a son, and that was right before. Well, that was when we moved to Sarasota. He was a baby. And so I stayed at home for a while and then just really didn't like that enough. And so I got a job. I think his first salary was something like $3,600 a year. So It didn't pay for much. And so we stayed down there. Our daughter was born there in 73. And he wanted to come back to Gainesville to get his doctorate. He'd already gotten his master's and he wanted to get his doctorate in education. So we were moving back to Gainesville. Our daughter was like 3 months old. And when we got back to Gainesville, I realized that things had changed because in between the time we had gone down there in 69 or 70, and then came back in 73, there was a more of a drug culture going on that wasn't there before. I mean, you know, there was a lot of medicine cabinet drugs going on, you know, and so, as well as, cocaine and, probably even harder than that. But, you know, I really didn't like the way that kind of stuff made me feel. So alcohol was really my drug of choice. And so we hung out in Gainesville while he went to school. I went to work for the University of Florida. And, you know, things progressed. But our relationship was digressing. And we split up. And I moved with the kids to North Carolina for one summer and two winters, and that was enough for me. And so I moved back to Gainesville and met my second husband. And I never saw myself as an alcoholic. My first husband was my caretaker in that he didn't drink that much, and so I always had a ride, ride home with him. My second husband, I knew he was an alcoholic because he drank himself silly and suffered from it the next day. And
But did you recognize, did you just think at the time that he drank too much?
Yes.
Or did the word alcoholic come into your mind?
No, I just thought he drank too much. Mm-hmm. And eventually he went to one of the places, like the centers now, to not to get sober, but just get counseling. And they, you know, they talked to him about his drinking, and he took the test and turned out he was an alcoholic. I didn't think I drank that much. And so, so they talked to me and asked me if I could quit drinking. And I said, it would be harder for me to quit smoking than to quit drinking. So that was about it for me. I went to some early meetings with him and some chalk talks, you know, with whoever it was that was doing the chalk talks, the movie, and learned a lot. And so I decided that maybe I should go to Al-Anon.
But at that time, you never thought, well, maybe I...
No,
okay.
Never. And in fact, I was drinking gin and tonic at that time and would black out, but never thought that if you drink this, you're going to black out. It was just a gin and tonic night, you know? this is a gin drinking night. So he went into AA, and I went to Al-Anon, and I was still drinking. And he told me that he didn't mind if I drank. You know, he said, I don't want to have to carry a drunk around, but I don't mind if you drink, because I'm the one with a problem. And so I drank, and I drank freely, but I had to see myself drink. Instead of watching him and, you know, seeing him as a drunk, I had to see myself as a drunk. So that was probably the best thing he could have ever done for me.
Because that's when you might have started possibly looking at the quantity and frequency.
Not so much the quantity and the frequency, but the actions afterward.
I see.
The consequences of my drinking.
Because
my drinking was beginning to get me into trouble. I never... thank God, ever had a DUI, but I hit a few mailboxes, and I peed my pants once getting home after taking the babysitter home, right? And that was the least of it, you know.
Hangover.
That was the least of it. I sometimes became like a I will say it, a Lady Godiva, but I didn't go nude. but for lack of a better word, I became, a goddess when I drank. I seemed to attract other men when I drank, or I was attracted to other men. How about that when I drank? Let's be honest here. You're in such a delusion when you're drinking that, and you're so selfish that you really don't think about anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I was working in Gainesville, I was working in Gainesville, but my second husband's work took him to Ocala, and I moved to Ocala. We got married in Ocala. In fact, we got a keg and then invited people over for a summer afternoon party, and surprise, surprise, we got married. So
so that's what brought you to Ocala, was your second husband's job.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yep. Followed him right over here. And
what year was that? Do you remember that?
In 76. So 77, I think.
Okay.
77.
70s. Mm-hmm.
And we were married when I came into the program, which was in 1983. No, excuse me, 82. When I came in the program in 82, we got married in... I guess we've been married about 3 years, maybe. I don't know. I can't do dates. but that's the general. I know I came in the program in the summer of 82. And he also had been in the program about a year by that time.
Okay.
And by October, I was kind of asking myself whether I had, I was really an alcoholic or not. And maybe I wasn't. Maybe I just came in because he was in the program. Maybe I could just drink a little. Mm. And come to find out, he was also questioning himself. And so the very same night, we had an argument. He left and I stayed home. And he went out and drank. And this was October 16th. Of 1982. And so he went out and drank. We always had a bottle of bourbon there for when his parents came so they could have a drink. So I got into the bourbon and it was just crazy. I was crazier than a bed bug, if bed bugs are crazy. went out to the garage, found an old board and some spray paint and put the house up for sale, went and put it in the front yard. He had recently bought a handgun that we were going to go and practice on. I had never used it, so I decided I was going to go out and find this practice place and use the gun, but I thought better of that and didn't do that, thank God. But it just, as the night went on, I was just crazier and crazier. And it just struck me that here I am, you know, in one night, it hit me that way. Now, I've heard other people say, you know, they went back into it slowly. Nope, I was head first. And he had bought 2 liters of beer. And so I came back in on the 17th. He wanted to finish his 2 liters of beer and came back in on the 18th. So I wound up one day more sober than he was. And I never let him forget it. Anyway, Kathy and John Peek were very instrumental in our sobriety. Kathy, at that point in time, was a good friend. I don't remember how much sobriety she had, but there were very few women that had any long-term sobriety at that point in time. There were very few meetings. There probably, when I came in, there were 3 main meetings. And one of them was the Serenity, which was in a voting building off of 441, South 441. There was the Grace Group at the Grace Episcopal Church, mm-hmm. and Ocala.
The Ocala Group.
The Ocala Group. And that was it. And there was probably a meeting every night. And the meetings were, like, some meetings would be, big book meetings. Some meetings would be 12 and 12 meetings. At Serenity on Sunday, there was always a meeting with bingo after. And of course, at that point in time, they were smoking meetings. And I'm telling you, those buildings were smoking. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have an intergroup at that time.
I was just thinking to ask you, I was wondering if there was a central office.
No, we didn't have a central office. We had an answering machine that would take down, and that had some, she had some numbers there, whoever was doing the answering machine and answering company is what it was. It wasn't okay. Just a machine. And she had some numbers that she could call and let people know.
I see.
And that's how I got my first 12-step call for me to go somewhere else. Now, I only had about a year sobriety, so it's like, oh. But I was, and my name wasn't even on the 12-step list except for Al-Anon. So anyway, this particular person that needed help was only one block from our house. So I think that's why she called us. And, you know, it's funny how everything works out exactly the way it's supposed to work out, because that was on a Friday night. And normally we went to the Friday night step study at Serenity, and I was dragging my feet. You know, I was supposed to be getting ready, but I was dragging my feet. And it wasn't that I didn't want to go. It was just like I couldn't motivate myself to move towards getting ready to go. And I didn't know why. And so finally, I just told my husband, I said, you go ahead and go, and I'll meet you there. And it wasn't 5 minutes after he left as I got this 12-step call. And I said, but I don't even have a year of sobriety, or I don't have much more than a year of sobriety. I can't remember. And they said, it's okay. Somebody else with longtime sobriety is going to be there. So I just want you to go over there and be with her until they get there. That's, I can do that. So this person was Sweet Ruth. At that point in time, I mean, she did get sober and was sober when she passed, but she at this time she was in and out a little bit. And so, and I still was having thoughts about being, you know, a real alcoholic at that time.
Whether you were or not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, so anyway, I went over there and her son and she had an argument probably about her drinking again, and he had popped her on her lip, and her lip was bleeding. Wow. So I'm going, okay, I can handle this. So I put some ice in a wash rag and, you know, held her on her lip. But I was just there to see. Honestly, I was, because at that point, my son was 14 or 15, and I could, you know, I could see this happening to me. You know, I mean, it was, okay, if you drink again, and you wind up, you know, getting drunk like she's drunk, this could happen to you. Is this where you want to be? Mm-hmm. That was the thoughts that went through my head. And so I stayed there with her. Sure enough, this other couple came that had longtime sobriety, and, you know, they talked to her and did everything you're supposed to do on a 12-step call. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember, actually, if I went on to the meeting or if I went home. I just can't remember.
Your husband probably wondered what happened to her.
I hope she's not drinking. But fortunately, after our both of us going out, we never drank again. So, but the more sober we both got, because when we got together, we were both drinking. Mm. The more sober we got, the more we realized that maybe we really would make better friends than, you know, as a couple. And so, and he was pretty much a daredevil. He was a cave diver and went off to live in Mexico for a few years. And even after we got divorced, he invited me to come down and see Mexico and the whole bit. So we were pretty good friends after the divorce. And, so somewhere along in there, I met somebody in the program, James N, and so we got the idea, or it was brought up, the idea of we needed to possibly have a club and where we could have meetings and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I had gotten my realtor's license, and so I said, well, I'll just look. You know, I'll see if I can find us a place. And sure enough, this place right off of 8th down there was a Goodfellows club where they served breakfast for, I guess, men who worked in Ocala or something. I'm not sure exactly what the Goodfellows did, but you can look it up.
Okay.
But it was a nice big meeting room, and it had an area for a kitchen in the other end of it. And it opened out to the park there off of 8th on one side, and had a nice big parking lot in the back of it. So it was really perfect. And so I was able to negotiate that for the people that were involved with it. And so it went through very, very smoothly. I'm not sure exactly, I can't quite remember how the lease went, but I think it was like a balloon type mortgage. And so once we had the building and we were getting it set up and everything, we were able to start Happy, Joyous, and Free there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know which year that was, but it turned out to be a really nice place to have mm-hmm. meetings.
Especially considering it doesn't sound like there was any other place in town that was like that.
No.
Had that kind of space and had the kids, the facilities.
And right. And they owned it. You know, I mean, it was like they actually.
Renting.
Yeah. The board for the club and everything, they owned it. And it had nice space for that. It had social activities. They did bingo. Mm-hmm. They did Christmas party for the kids, you know, they were able to do all these kind of things. Mm-hmm. And also they had a lunch meeting in there every single day.
Oh,
and they,
wow.
they used to call it the Loony Noonies because a lot of times it was brand new people in the program who didn't have jobs yet, but they needed some place to go and have a meeting in the middle of the day. And then I think later on, they had early morning meetings there so mm-hmm. that people could go before they went to work. But the Happy
and
Joyous
at this and time, was it still a lot more men than women?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but actually there were, you know, a lot of women coming in. And when people came down from up north, there were women that came down that had more sobriety than some of the women here had.
Right.
And so the numbers were starting to change a little bit. The meetings had increased. We probably had, I don't know, by this time, it was probably 85, maybe 86. And 1986, and mm-hmm. so the meetings had really increased. I couldn't tell you exactly how many meetings we had, but there were quite a few.
But you're right, because around that time, the retirement community here in Marion County really did start to grow around that time. So the population really took off, and that affected the number of drunks that were in town.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So, in around 86, 87, I had somewhere between 4 and 6 years of sobriety. And we went on a trip with Kathy and John Peake to Georgia. I can't remember where it was, but it was like a conference, mm-hmm. an AA conference. And they used to go all the time. So they took us with them. And on the way there, John said, "We need to have a gratitude dinner." And I said, I didn't say anything, actually. And he said, "We've never had a gratitude dinner. Other places have gratitude dinners. I think it's time we have a gratitude dinner." I'm going, "Oh, that's great, John." He goes, "And I want you to do it." And I went, "What?" So, you know, today when we get together and do the gratitude dinner, we have a committee and we have all these people. Well, on the first one, and
a budget.
Huh?
And a budget for the dinner too. There's a budget now. I don't
right.
know if there was.
Yeah. Right. No, we didn't have a budget. We didn't have anything. We sold tickets, but we had it at where the Advent Hospital is. Is it Advent?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you drove around the hospital, you'd see a door with a blue awning over the door, like a little blue round awning. So I guess if somebody's standing there and it's raining, they wouldn't get wet. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the door we went into. We had it there. They catered it, and there was room for 100 people. And so once we knew that and they were going to cater it, that was good. We didn't have to worry about getting somebody to cook it or anything like that.
Yeah.
And some people helped get raffle items. So we were going to have a raffle there. And then some people helped with literature. There was going to be some literature there, I think, and And I don't know who the speaker was. I really cannot remember who the speaker was. I don't think I was in charge of getting the speaker because I didn't know anybody. I didn't know people that well. And so so we got 100 tickets and we sold all 100 tickets, but we didn't sell most of them till the last week, which is always, you know, it was like, how are we going to do this, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, here these people are cooking for 100 people, and but, you know, alcoholics don't buy anything till the last minute. So, and that was told to me, don't worry, you're not in charge. God's in charge. Just, you know, relax. Everything will happen. And since it was our very first one, we were going to have, we had a huge birthday cake there for dessert. And we had a refrigerator in our garage. And so the cake was in the refrigerator. And sure enough, we went off and left the cake at home.
Oh, no.
That was the only flub up that I remember about that night was the cake. And somebody went and got the cake. I don't remember who did that either. But it went off perfectly, just like it was supposed to. And just like, you know, there's always a solution if there's a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, one year, the person who was supposed to cook the chicken had their dates mixed up. And so we went to one of the, not Kentucky Fried, but one of the chicken places and got chicken for everybody, you know. There's always a solution when there's a problem. So,
And it was held every year after that point.
Yes, every year after that point.
And now I believe the ticket sales are limited to, I want to say 300. It's either 300 or 350. So it's like three times the size
right now.
Right.
And that's only limited, I mean, because there's always people looking for tickets afterwards, but that's only limited because of space.
Right.
You know, having a place in Ocala, you just really don't have the places that you can put that many people in. So that has kitchen facilities, because it's so hard to cater something outside and bring it in.
Right, it is.
So
and keep it warm.
Yeah, so... So anyway, it was really, like I said, really, it was good for me, and because, you know, I really had to work the third step through that process, and just because, and John and Kathy were so supportive, they were like, just let it go, let it go. Kathy wound up being my sponsor, and one of my best friends, and she wound up having, I think, 50 years in the program before she passed. She passed in 21, January of 21.
Oh, recent then. And she, I know that I've heard so many people in meetings say, they came to town and they called central office and Kathy P. answered the phone. I've heard that time and time and time again. So I'm thinking, was she the first person to?
I don't think it was Kathy, though. I don't think
No,
I don't think she ever worked in intergroup.
Oh, okay.
But I think there was another Kathy that worked there, because intergroup was started about the same time as the club was.
Oh, okay, around that same time.
Yeah.
All
right. And we had Bill. I can't think of his last name, so, but he's passed on too. Bill was like the social person, and he went to all the meetings, which, you know, maybe was 15 at that point. He went to all the meetings and carried the news of any activities that were happening.
Wow.
He was like the social crier, and just the nicest person. And so eventually, and that was when, you know, it was still on the answering service. Mm-hmm. Eventually, a bunch of people got together. Ann and Jim Kitchen were two of them that were main instrumental in getting the intergroup started. And they both passed on. They got everything we needed together, wrote the bylaws. That was for intergroup, yeah. And they, you know, they found a little place, and, you know, they probably backed some of it to get it started too, you know. Mm-hmm. But But we needed somebody to actually be a person who was in AA to carry the message and talk to people who were calling. Because at that point in time, there were a lot of people calling about looking for meetings or looking for help. A lot of times it was wives calling. So the, you know, the information needed to be all together and really needed to be given out right then by someone who was in the program. So that was important. And, you know, and intergroup was, it was important that we had somebody who would, be able to disseminate information about what was going on.
Right, because at that time, the phone, was the main, way to get information. Yeah. There was, things weren't found on the internet. I mean, you couldn't Google and find where the meetings were in Marion County or Ocala. You called.
Right.
Using your phone book.
Right. Right. And Ruth might be the person that you're thinking about. Yes.
It was Ruth. You're right. It was Ruth.
Yes. She was at Intergroup for a long, long time.
Yes.
Until she just couldn't do it any longer.
Yeah.
So, and that was the same Ruth that I showed up at her house with the lips.
Really? Yeah. Oh my gosh. You're right. Exactly right. It was Ruth. Yeah. But I have heard Kathy P's name so many times.
Yeah. She, you know, she was big in district and, you know, the regional and the district and then the whatever it's
area.
Called. Area. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, great for service. I mean, she really, really promoted service around here. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, you've done pretty good. You touched on everything that I had marked here to go over, you know, how the meetings were when you first started, and you even talked about the format, meeting formats at the time, and how many groups were in town. And you did talk about things that you've done for service work. I think that the 12-step information that you gave was interesting in how you said that it really helped you in identifying of what it could be for you if you picked up a drink again. And so many times we say, you know, the sponsor gets as much out of it as a sponsee, that relationship. But with the 12-step call, that's the same too.
Right.
The person doing the 12-step is getting benefiting also.
Right.
So that was really good.
So do you want me to go on just a little bit?
Sure.
I guess it was like in 1987, I'd been in the program 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that I was going to go back to school. I got a letter in the mail. I decided I was going back to school, got a letter in the mail. And the letter in the mail said, the University of South Florida, excuse me, is going to send professors to, it's west of town, you know, Hernando, down to Hernando County. To offer, there was a teacher shortage at the time, to offer classes for people who have their AA degree to get their teacher's license.
Oh, excellent.
And so at that point, I knew that I wanted to work with kids because I had worked with four-year-olds at one of the preschools, not preschools, but daycares here in town.
Oh, okay.
For preschool, that was before they had it in the schools. And so I thought, you know, I'm doing this for peanuts. I might as well do it to get a real salary and get some time in for Social Security and that kind of stuff. So I said, well, I'll check this out. Well, one of the things that said, you know, you have to turn in your transcripts. And I had at that point gotten classes at maybe two other schools besides the University of Florida. And I'm going, oh, that's going to be such a hassle to get those transcripts together. And sure enough, they just all came in. I asked for them and they sent them. And so when the time came, there were 40 of us that showed up over there. And, and it was a year and a half to get, your degree in education, a Bachelor of Science.
Mm-hmm.
And so which was just perfect timing because Dan was getting the wanderlust and you know, going through midlife crisis or something. And so, you know, things were not, they were a little choppy at home. And so so he decided to go and pursue his diving career, at, okay. of which he did. And I wound up graduating in 1988, in August of 1988. And so we actually got divorced in February of 88. Mm-hmm. I graduated in August of 88. And then sad thing, a really sad thing happened amongst the good things, was that my son was killed by a drunk driver in an accident out on Highway 27. And he was on a motorcycle and was hit by a car. And died instantly.
Oh dear.
So, so for the next 6 years, I was teaching school and seeing him in my students, which was really nice because he was brilliant. I mean, I know I'm his mother, but he was brilliant. They didn't know where he was on the intelligence scale.
Wow.
So, so it was quite a loss, and. The people in AA just surrounded me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I couldn't walk, they held me up. And, you know, I don't know what I would have done if I hadn't had the program at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I kind of over-mothered my daughter, who was a freshman in high school at the time, and she finally came up to me and said, "Mom, I feel like I'm going to live a long time, just to let you know." So, and she had a lot of support also. So, you know, this program is so beautiful, and God is so good. I was feeling one night, I went to Grace Episcopal to hear us, actually I was speaking that night.
Oh, to hear yourself.
but this was on a Saturday, and I got a phone call from another girl that came in about the same time I did, and we were close friends. Her name was Janet, and we're still Facebook friends. She's out in Colorado, and we'll always be close friends. And she called and said that Angie, who was pregnant, was ready to have her baby, but her husband had to take her brother to Orlando because his plane was leaving. And so she said, "Could you go and meet her at the hospital and be with her at the hospital while her husband does this?" And I said, "Yeah," because it was Saturday and I didn't have anything else to do. My daughter had plans. So I went over there, and they sent her home. They said, "You're not quite ready yet."
Mm.
And by that time, her husband had gotten back. And so she had told me that, you know, she didn't have anything. She didn't have anything packed or nothing. And no, they used the same toothbrush. So I said, "Okay, I'll go to Walgreens or someplace and pick some stuff up for you so you'll have it in the hospital when you're staying there." Because at that point, it was like 3 days, I think. And so I went and I did that, and I went back to her house to take it to her. And she said, "You know, my mom isn't going to be here. Do you think you could stay with me?"
Mm-hmm.
So I stayed with her that day until she was ready to go back to the hospital, and she wanted me to go back to the hospital with her. So I was there with her and her husband, and she and they, you know, did everything pretty much in the same room. And the nurse that was there tending to her said, "Who are you?" And I said, "Well, I think I'm the surrogate mom." So she gave me and her husband greens to put on. And so we were both there. And she was having a hard time. It was taking a long time. And I was supposed to speak at Grace. And I told her, I said, "You know, I've been here with you all this time. If you really feel like you have to have this baby before I get back, you know, please feel free. I'm going to go speak and I will be back." So I came back. She still hadn't had the baby.
Oh, wow.
And but finally she did. She had a beautiful baby girl. And that baby girl has just recently gotten married. And so, and Angie and her husband are in the program down in Tampa. They're both realtors. And so, so I got home, I guess about 1 o'clock, and I was so exhausted. I went to sleep and I woke up the next morning, and the very first thought that came to my mind was, first of all, I had been feeling like, you know, I always thought I would be there when my son had his first baby, when his wife had the first baby, and I would be there to hold that baby. And so those are the kinds of things that you miss you grieve over when you lose someone so young. And the first thing I thought of that next morning was, all children are God's children. And you didn't hold his first baby, but you held this first baby.
Yes.
And Angie, the one that had the baby, she was about his age, 19. So, it's, you know, it's just a miracle the way things happen, because I didn't grieve that anymore after that. I just feel like, I didn't call her, they called me.
Yes.
But I showed up. You know, and I do think that in this program, if you show up, you know, good things will come to you and good things will happen.
Yes. And I was thinking that too. You know, you were talking about the support, and I certainly feel that in a major way. If you give this program a chance and then you embrace it.
The willingness. You have to be open-minded and have the willingness mm-hmm. to learn.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. I mean, you know, I've touched on a few things. There's been so many things that have, you know, just been little miracles that happen in the program because you're aware of it. You know?
And your mind was in the right place to...
I needed
it. To take that experience with the birth of that baby and then compare it or think of your son, but then turn back around and see a different side of it, a positive side of it,
that was
a healing side of
it. Yeah, that was a gift. It's like, I don't know where some of these things come from that you hear, mm-hmm. you know?
It is amazing, too, in our lives where you might be touched by something, and for that moment, you feel a lift in pain or anxiety or whatever for that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are times where that lift happens and it never comes back. Your pain is lifted, but it doesn't come back.
No, it doesn't.
That doesn't happen too often to me, but it has.
It's like a switch. It's mm-hmm. like somewhere a switch is turned, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I really believe in prayer, and I truly... I think a lot of times you get what you ask for, but you got to be careful what you pray for if you're going to pray for things.
Right.
Today I try to pray for God's will. You know, I don't mind stating to the universe and to God what it is I would like to have happen, but if it's his will, I'll accept it, whatever it is. So I found out a couple of days ago that my stepson, my second husband's son, mm-hmm. that he was diagnosed with a very, very a million to one rare cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so rare, you know, you have to really look to find somewhere where they're trying to treat it.
Right.
And so, you know, it's a very, very scary thing. And I, you know, the thought of losing him, I just don't want to go there. You know, I have to turn it over. You know, I have to believe that if it's possible, and that if, you know, if that it's his time to be healed and spread the word about that, then that would be wonderful. But if it's his time to rejoin his higher power, then that would be wonderful too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just, it's, you know, you just never know from one day to the next. You just have to, you know, wake up, show up, do what's in front of you to do for that day. And like you said, be open,
mm-hmm.
to incoming ideas and be open to working with people and be open and just willing to take the next step. So, so you know, it's a wonderful program, and I'm glad that we didn't mess it up.
Well, thank you so much. I got so much out of hearing your story, and it's been it was wonderful to meet you. So I really appreciate it. And if there's nothing further that you'd like to end with, we can end this interview.
I think that's it.
All right, Judy. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.